Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 27th, 2024. It has been 3,712 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 36 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 33 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Tuesday and Wednesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission – the truth. Because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. There are only small changes from yesterday, so if you want to skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings. I won't even know you did that. 1. Russia is taking advantage of the United States' inertia to restart its campaign to destroy Ukraine's electrical infrastructure. 2. The continued disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, resulting in repeated acts of aggression against NATO alliance members and Ukraine's allies. 3. The filing of a motion to vacate against Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and the April 19th resignation of Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher has created a window of opportunity that could move U.S. military aid for Ukraine forward. 4. Ukraine continues to systematically target Russia's oil refining capability to cause economic harm and degrade Russian mobility, despite protests from the US. 5. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies, and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 6. The second phase of the Russian 2024 winter offensive has reached its culmination point, and Russia is preparing for a summer offensive. 7. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. While there was fighting along the entire line of conflict, there were only a few significant developments to report. I can summarize the action report in 2 sentences. There was fighting in all the same places, and there was no change in the situation. Here are the major events that happened on the battlefield. Russia initiated 50 ground attacks on March the 26th, with 21 in Novomikhailivka in the Vuhledar area of operation, or AO. Russian mercenary male blogger Wagonzo reported that Russian troops continued their attacks on the eastern edge of Georgievka and the southwestern edge of Pobeda without success. Heavy fighting continued in Novomikhailivka, mostly led by waves of Russian infantry units. Ukrainian forces are holding their new defensive lines that cut through the center of the settlement. We can confirm that another Black Sea Fleet ship was damaged. The command of the Naval Forces of Ukraine reported that on March the 24th, the Project 18-80 Yuri Ivanov-class spy and surveillance ship Ivan Khurs was hit by a Neptune anti-ship missile. The vessel was at its berth in occupied Sevastopol. High-resolution satellite images that we link to in our situation report confirm that Khurs was hit at the stern. However, there isn't enough resolution to determine the extent of the damage. Those are the big stories on the Ukrainian battlefront. Lumber and timber from Kazakhstan is passing through Belarus to Poland despite sanctions and is distributed across the European Union using forged documents, according to a joint investigation by Schemes and Gazeta Wyborcza. In 2023, according to Eurostat, 68 million euros of timber moved across the Polish border, a 500% increase from 2022. When asked for an explanation, Polish customs officials told the journalists that it does not have, quote, the physical ability to check all customs declarations. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Poland added that enforcement of sanctions is not part of their capabilities. Here is what's happening on the Russian front. The head of the Federal Security Service of Russia, FSB, Alexander Bortnikov, baselessly blamed Ukraine for the March the 22nd terror attack in Moscow. He did confirm that the United States provided anti-terror intelligence to Russia on March the 7th. Quote, "This information was of a general nature about the preparation of terrorist attacks in places of mass gathering of citizens. We responded to this information and, of course, took appropriate measures." Unquote. However, he claimed that the March the 22nd attack was a separate event. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov rejected an offer by Interpol to assist with Moscow's ongoing investigation into the attack. Quote, "We can handle it ourselves. We are already accustomed to the double standards of the West." Unquote. You can handle it yourselves. You couldn't even handle a 3-day special military operation. Our analysts investigated claims that potential Russian security agents at the Krokus City Hall concert venue were involved in the apprehension of the terrorists near the border of Belarus. In our assessment, there was insufficient evidence to conclusively identify the men in the pictures as being the same people. Multiple videos during the capture and court hearings of the terrorists do confirm that some Russian security agents are so-called men in blue, who wear blue jeans and dark blue jackets or shirts. But there is nothing more to be concluded. The overwhelming evidence shows that ISIS-K committed the attack. We are looking forward to moving on from having to pull apart conspiracy theories and disinformation. In St. Petersburg, a teen and an adult were arrested for sabotaging railroad infrastructure near the Udelnaya station. Honestly, the whole report about the suspects is, in a word, bonkers. The teen was turned over to the juvenile court, while the adult faces up to 20 years in prison. On March the 22nd, in the enclave of Kaliningrad, a natural gas distribution point and pipeline were sabotaged, causing an explosion and fire. Russian officials reportedly tried to cover up the incident as an accident, later announcing they were searching for the suspects. In our assessment, fighting between Free Russian Liberation and pro-Putin forces in Bryansk, Kursk and Belgorod has ended. We updated the war map to show the withdrawal of the Free Russian forces. Heavy shelling of the city of Belgorod continued for the 15th day in a row. Here is my theater-wide update. U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller indirectly confirmed last week's report by the Financial Times that Washington had pressed Ukraine to stop its attacks on Russian refineries. CNN reporter Kylie Atwood asked Miller about the Financial Times report, with Miller responding, quote, "I'm not going to speak to specific conversations, but it has always been our position since the outset of this war that we do not encourage or support Ukraine taking strikes outside its own territory." Unquote. When pressed to clarify if Washington had recently discussed the attacks on Russian refineries with Ukraine, Miller pushed back, quote, "This has been our long-time policy that we have made clear to the Ukrainian government." Unquote. It is clear indeed that Ukrainians dying quietly is so much more convenient than Ukrainians struggling to survive. You could have said just that, Mr. Miller. On the night of March the 25th the 26th, all 12 Shahed 136 one-way drones launched by Russia were shot down by Ukraine. An analysis of recent KH-101 cruise missile debris found that the optical guidance systems used during the terminal approach are not equipped with night vision sensors. It is believed that this is a key reason why the missile strikes are timed to arrive at their targets after dawn. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announced that he was making changes to the government. Quote, "I am grateful to Oleksiy Danilov for his work as the Secretary of the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine. He is transferred to another path. More on that later. I appointed Oleksandr Litvinenko as the new Secretary of the National Security Council. He will combine his experience of leading for Foreign Intelligence Service of Ukraine with the tasks facing the National Security and Defense Council. Oleh Ivaschenko became the new head of foreign intelligence. Unquote. In an interview with the U.S. news agency Politico, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, bristled at the continued delays in receiving military aid. Quote, "Give us the damn Patriots. If we had enough air defense systems, namely Patriot, we would be able to protect not only the lives of our people, but also our economy from destruction." Unquote. On March the 24th, we reported that the approved U.S. 2024 budget included $300 million in USAID funds that could be trapped to provide Ukraine with another one-time military aid package. We've since learned that the money was already allocated in November 2023. France announced it would provide Ukraine with 80,000 artillery shells by the end of 2024, which is separate from all other programs previously announced. If all future promised deliveries are made, Ukraine will receive almost 300,000 more shells by June. Through the rest of 2024, there are clear commitments to provide almost 1.2 million additional rounds. There is also the ability to purchase another million rounds if adequate funds can be secured for the Czech initiative. Thank you to our European allies for filling the gap. France announced it had secured the funding to provide Ukraine with 78 Caesar 155mm self-propelled howitzers, SPGs, and the new funds have enabled it to speed up delivery. French officials also said they would adapt its AASM precision glide bombs to be compatible with the F-16. Currently, Ukraine is using MiG-29s to deliver the ordnance. Czech volunteers collected almost $1 million as part of the Gifts to Putin program. The money will be used to purchase over 1,000 RPG-75M anti-tank weapons. German arms maker Rheinmetall will receive almost $150 million from the EU to expand ammunition production. The money will be used to increase production in Germany and build at least 4 ammunition factories in Ukraine. Denmark confirmed that it would transfer 19 F-16s to Ukraine and sell 24 to Argentina. The Minister of Defense of Denmark, Troels Lund Poulsen, said they couldn't announce the final details until they received approval from the United States. We haven't talked about the Land of Mobiks, Mobilization and Mir in a while. Russian Minister of Defense Sergei Shoigu scoffed at reporters when asked if additional mobilization would be required, calling the question, quote, complete stupidity. The repeated rumors and questions about future waves of mobilization in Russia are pointless because the September 21, 2022 partial mobilization decree was never rescinded and the Ministry of Defense has never stopped mobilization. The Ministry of Defense suspended the mandatory retirement age for Russian troops. Last year, the Kremlin increased the retirement age for enlisted personnel to 65 and officers to 70. The change was reportedly made due to the shrinking number of experienced junior and field officers and the inability to train replacements fast enough. According to the Russian Officers Killed in Ukraine project, 3,812 officers have been killed in combat through March 22, 2024, just over 5 a day. That includes 1,896 junior officers and 1,302 field officers. Not all officer deaths are publicly reported, so the actual number is higher. Reacting to Russia's response after the March 22 Moscow terrorist attack, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Kyrgyzstan issued an advisory to avoid travel to Russia. The notice cited enhanced security measures and expanding anti-terror programs. Tajiks living in Russia have been advised not to leave their homes after dark and to avoid public events. Russian security services have reportedly requested all employers to provide the name, passport information, and address of all employees who are citizens of Tajikistan. Even though the terrorists that attacked Moscow came from Tajikistan and traveled to Russia through Turkey, and despite being connected to ISIS-K in Afghanistan and attempting to flee to Belarus, Moscow wants you to believe this is all Ukraine's fault. Away from the planet of pink ponies, the warnings are further indications that the CSTO alliance is fraying. Just one big happy family. The Russian Federation suspended the delivery of two S-400 air defense batteries to India, telling New Delhi that they were needed for Russian defense. This is at least the third arms shipment Russia has delayed or outright cancelled since it expanded its war of aggression against Ukraine in 2022. IC BRICS is one big happy family too. Some listeners may find the next segment offensive. It contains racially charged language and describes a hate crime incident. But we think it's important to share we found some Nazis, but not in Ukraine. A group of young men in the Moscow metro accosted a woman from the Yakutia region. In the video, the woman is told, quote, "Now, get the f*** out of here. Russia is for Russians, Moscow is for Moscovites, Africa is for and dumps are for hutches." Quick sidebar, that's a derogatory term for people from Caucasus and those who appear Muslim. He finishes his verbal assault by declaring, quote, "Glory to Kliva." Kliva is a nickname of a Russian Nazi ideologist, and makes a Nazi salute. At least four men were involved. Wonderful Russian Mir.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Putin's purge is accelerating as Russia plunges into a state ruled by an autocrat embracing Stalinism. The Kremlin appears poised to use the March the 22nd terror attack on Moscow as a casus belli to lift the 1996 moratorium on the death penalty. Yesterday, the State Duma debated two draft resolutions. Duma deputy Sergei Mironov called for Putin's air restoration on the September the 8th referendum ballot, but Chairman Vyacheslav Volodin told the Duma that the death penalty could be restored without a vote by the people because a, quote, "decision of the Constitutional Court is sufficient." The death penalty was enshrined in the 1993 Russian Federation Constitution and is reserved for five crimes. On December 31, 1996, Russia suspended the death penalty so that it could join the Council of Europe. Moscow withdrew from the Council on March 15, 2022, a day before it would be expelled. Quick assessment. Because Russia views the illegal annexation of occupied Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia, Kherson, and Crimea as legitimate, the restoration would almost certainly extend to occupied Ukraine. Our analysts believe that the death penalty will be restored by the summer and then quickly expanded to cover other crimes. Nikolai Konashenko, the husband of the director of New Holland Island in St. Petersburg, was arrested at Pulkovo Airport. Konashenko has been charged with justifying terrorism and is facing 7 years in prison for social media posts on the banned platform Facebook. After his arrest, state security services released a forced confession and apology video. His wife, Roxana Shatunovska, was forced to resign her directorship. A woman in Belgorod was arrested under Russia's so-called Don't Say War laws after criticizing the lack of response by Moscow to civil unrest in the Belgorod region. Speaking on a live stream, the woman said, quote, "They are happy that my son is dying in the war, but I am happy that they are dying there. This is a separate state. They live as they want. F*** you, City Hall. Let's talk to you about Belgorod. They are bombed every day. And every day people die there. No, we won't talk about Belgorod, this is par for the course." Unquote. A person watching the stream wrote a denunciation and she has been charged with justification of terrorism. A St. Petersburg court has formally charged 76-year-old physicist Alexander Kuranov with treason. He was the former general director and chief designer of the Research Enterprise for Hypersonic Systems and has authored numerous white papers on missile technology. Kuranov has been held in pretrial detention since 2021 and is accused of transferring state secrets. He is the 13th engineer who worked on Russia's hypersonic missile programs to be charged with treason. A Moscow court extended the detention of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich another 3 months. Gershkovich was arrested in Yekaterinburg a year ago and charged with espionage. Moscow has yet to provide any evidence or outline its case. He is the first American journalist to be charged with espionage since the Cold War. Roskomnadzor is preparing to monitor all internet traffic and communications through public Wi-Fi as a measure to counter threats to the Russian Federation. The announcement was made before the March 22 terror attack on Moscow. This next story sits between the line of Russian MIR and a war crime. Russia's favorite book burner, State Duma deputy Elena Yampolskaya, has submitted a draft law that would establish new rules on books available in libraries. The law would target material authored by declared foreign agents and anyone on the Rosfinmonitoring list of extremists and terrorists. Officially, Russia does not have any book banning laws, opting to use political and public pressure to drive censorship. Now, here's the war crime part. The law would also limit people living under occupation from accessing Ukrainian literature, claiming they are, quote, equipped with Ukrainian propaganda literature, which is clearly anti-Russian in nature, and directed against Russian socio-political leaders, and books glorifying nationalists and traitors, unquote. In our War Crimes and Human Rights section, we sometimes discuss topics that include torture, gender-based violence, and atrocities. Today's report contains some graphic content, so listener discretion is advised. The UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine reported that between December 1 and February 29, there were, quote, credible allegations that 32 Ukrainian prisoners of war were executed in 12 separate incidents, including 3 verified by the organization. The mission also interviewed 60 former Ukrainian POWs, with almost every single one describing the institutional use of torture by their Russian captors. This included beatings, electrical shocks, mock executions, threats of execution, and being held in stress positions. Additionally, over 50% of Ukrainian POWs were victims of sexual violence while in captivity, according to the HRMMU director Daniel Bell. Ukraine provided unrestricted access to the HRMMU, which interviewed 44 Russian POWs currently in captivity. None of them claimed there was torture or ill treatment at Ukrainian POW camps, but, quote, several made credible reports of torture and maltreatment during their transit from the battlefield. The illegitimate Supreme Court of the so-called Donetsk People's Republic sentenced 10 more Azovstal defenders to nearly 3 decades in prison. Over 1,700 Ukrainian troops are still in captivity after a May 21, 2022 International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, and UN-brokered surrender agreement. The Ukrainian Parliament Human Rights Commissioner Dmytro Lubinets reported not a single Ukrainian returned through POW exchanges reported interacting with representatives of the ICRC. The Russian branch of the Red Cross, RRC, was accused of having direct links with the Russian Ministry of Defense and abusing funds received by the ICRC. A consortium of news agencies reviewed documentation that RRC director Pavel Savchuk is a member of the All-Russian Popular Front. Funds from the ICRC headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, were allegedly redirected to the occupied territories in violation of the RRC Charter. The British Foreign Ministry said that it was waiting for the results of an in-depth investigation, while Sweden called for the ICRC to take, quote, swift action in accordance with its constitution. The Putin-appointed illegitimate governor of occupied Zaporizhia, Yevgeny Balitsky, told Russian state media that Ukrainian POWs will never be returned. The Russian collaborator said that POWs would be used as penal labor and as forced conscripts until death to, quote, redeem their sins with blood. That sounds very similar to work makes you free. Russia is preparing to transfer 100 children from the occupied territories of Kherson and Zaporizhia oblasts to a drone warfare training camp in the Krasnodar Krai region. The group, aged 14 to 17, will start 6 weeks of training on April 1 as part of the Russian Federation Youth Army program. The forced conscription of people under occupation and the training and/or use of child soldiers is a breach of the Geneva Conventions. We always try to end the war crimes and human rights section with some good news, and we do have some. Since March the 1st, another 23 Ukrainian children have been repatriated from the occupied territories or Russia in 5 groups. The children ranged from 2 to 17 years old and included a 17-year-old who fled the occupied territories on his own. There are some key events in geopolitics I need to cover as I wrap up today's podcast. The illegitimate Minister of Foreign Affairs of the self-declared breakaway Republic of Transnistria in Moldova, Vitaly Ignatiev, told Russian state media that there are no plans to submit a request to Moscow for annexation. The statement provides final confirmation that all the political drama in February was just a psychological operation. In breaking news, Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić wrote on Instagram that difficult times were ahead, stating that he had received news that, quote, directly threatens our vital national interests. It is unclear what Vučić considers a threat to vital national interests, but the post comes a day after he hinted that Serbia would withdraw from the Council of Europe if Kosovo is allowed to join. The Russian Federation started an intense disinformation campaign in the Balkans early in March, and tension between Serbia and its neighbors has gotten progressively worse in the last 2 years. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.